Hey, we'd like to thank you for listening, and this show is sponsored by DizWheels. DizWheels has mobility scooters, strollers, and wheelchairs starting at only $20 a day. Single stroller, double stroller, whatever you need, they will get you moving. They also have one-day rentals, and they have free delivery and free pickup. If you want more information, go visit them at www.dizwheels.com or call them at 407-501-6883 to book. And you can check them out on Facebook at facebook.com/DizWheels. That's D-I-Z Wheels.
Welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast with your hosts, Tony Castelnova from DisneyByTheNumbers.com and Parkhopper John from WDWParkhoppers.com. Keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times. And get ready for the Disney Parks Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast. We have an incredible guest tonight, Diane Muldrow, who has grown up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, has moved to New York, and has spent several years performing as an actress and a dancer in New York's downtown avant-garde, say that 10 times fast, performance scene. She's also danced in a performance at Lincoln Center's Alice Tully Hall and had her own one-woman show, which I got to find out about that. But Diane also has had a successful career in publishing, both as an editor and as an author, and she has written over 100 books for children. And the big reason that we brought her in today is because she is the author of Everything I Need to Know I Learned from a Disney Little Golden Book. We cannot wait to dig into that. Welcome to the show, Diane. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm fantastic. It's so nice to have you for you to have me on your show.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. See, the tongue tied thing is not just me. You know, it happens all over the place.
That's true. I mean, I don't know anybody, probably in our listening community, that hasn't read or touched or probably even has some of them in their collection. A little Disney Golden Book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am the editor of Little Golden Books, so that's where this all comes from. I've been working in children's publishing for almost 30 years, and I started my career at Golden Books. I've worked other places in publishing, but I have almost 25 years with Little Golden Books. I'm back at the company. I came back in the 90s. I don't actually edit the Disney titles. I edit all the non-licensed Little Golden Books. Okay. And so I got the idea. Actually, this Everything I Need to Know is actually kind of a series now. And the first one was simply called Everything I Need to Know I Learned from a Little Golden Book. And that became a New York Times bestseller really quickly. And so, you know, quickly my company said, you know, Muldrow, you have to write more. And as you know, we have the Disney license. And so it seemed, as soon as I finished writing Everything I Need to Know I Learned from a Little Golden Book, I thought, wouldn't it be great to do a Disney one, you know? And so I wrote a Christmas one and I wrote a love one. And then it was time to write Disney. And I had a blast working on that. It was, and they've all hit the New York Times bestseller list. So that was really nice to see. But, you know, in some ways, I just think the Disney one is really special. I think it's of the four. I actually have another one coming out in spring of 2017, which is Family. But so there's five now. But the Disney one is really, I would say, the most inspirational. And these are considered very inspirational titles. But there's something about the Disney one which is just really, really special because of the content that I got to work with. And in my office, I have, believe it or not, at least one of every Little Golden Book ever published.
Wow.
So I had, you know, to get ready for the Disney Everything I Need to Know book, to get ready to write it, I had to literally crack open every Disney Little Golden Book. And there are, you know, hundreds at this point, because Golden Books and Disney go back to the 1940s and really the 1930s, because the company that before Little Golden Books came along, the printer who published Little Golden, who then went on to publish Little Golden Books, did those big little books, you know, the big little books.
Yep.
And one of the first big little books they did was a Mickey Mouse one. So and then when Little Golden Books came along, and Little Golden Books will be 75 years old next year, by the way. So,
holy mackerel.
So that is in itself a very auspicious thing that we're very busy doing right now to get ready for. We're working on the anniversary. But a big part of that celebration is the relationship that Golden Books has had with Disney over the years. And as you can imagine, you know, every movie that came out had a Little Golden Book tie-in, you know.
Yeah.
All those TV shows had a Little Golden Book tie-in. There were special Mickey Mouse Club edition Little Golden Books with a different spine. You know, the Little Golden Books have the, remember that gold foil tape?
Yep.
That goes along the spine. Well, for a little while, they did Mickey Mouse Club editions.
Wow.
And they had a special spine even to set them apart from the non-Disney Little Golden Books. So there's really a rich history, you know, within that Disney Little Golden Book canon. And it's such a blast to just go down the shelf and, oh, here's, you know, Johnny Appleseed. Here's, you know, all these Disney shorts that we've maybe sort of forgotten about. There's a Little Golden Book, you know. And we're having a lot of fun right now reissuing a lot of the Disney little, the really old ones, like Little Man of Disneyland came out last year. We just put out Mickey Mouse and His Spaceship and The Ugly Duckling, which was a short. And so if, you know, your real geeks out there are going to know that probably already, but you know, it's some serious, it's a serious amount of publishing that we've done. So I had a lot of fun just going through every book. I had edited Disney Little Golden Books like in the 80s, but I hadn't really worked on them since then. And it was just great to kind of get to know them again and start thinking of ways. You know, one of the things I wanted to do for the Disney Everything I Need to Know book was, it is a life guide, so I needed it to be something that you would give as a graduation present or to a child that had like really great advice in it, but of course lighthearted. So one of my main goals was, I want every major movie represented in the book. And every major character, you know, represented in the book. It almost became like a math problem, you know, because
right,
I was like, okay, I have to have Monsters, Inc. I have to have Snow White. You know, I have to have, you know, the Rescuers, you know, like, so it was just like a walk down my own personal life, you know,
right,
to go back in time. And then it was just a blast to do it. And I think I was really, really proud of it when it was done, because it touches on loyalty and love, and you know, the theme of it is, how do you get magic in your life? You know, so that's something that resonates for children as well as people my age, you know, or who are now in their, you know, I'm a baby boomer. So, you know, technically my books are aimed at the baby boomers who grew up with Little Golden Books. And the Disney one was really fun to do because I started by saying, is your life more ho-hum than hi-ho? And then, you know, you just get to, you know, have a lot of fun with that. And at the end, it's just about, the theme of the book is like, you know, magic is still all around you. You know, remember the magic that you felt as a child. It's still there for us. And it's up to you, though, to find it or to bring it back into your life. So it's inspirational, but also just really positive and very accessible. And I'm really, really excited by this book. Every time I read it, I just, you know, I just feel like it really is special because it's such great material
not only
to
that,
work with, you know?
Yeah, but not only that, but, you know, it's like a lot of Disney fans, you know, Disney fans come from different backgrounds or for different reasons, but a lot of the hardcore fans, you know, we live in kind of this weird nostalgia of, you know, that's the great thing about Disneyland specifically, because Walt created it. Walt was there. He walked those streets. And that's a palpable feeling when we walk down Main Street USA here at Walt Disney World. I mean, we've got 45 years of history,
mm-hmm.
but what you tapped into, you know, my wife and I collect, we've just recently in the last couple of years started really collecting the Little Golden Books, because that's a touchstone for both of us when we were growing up. I had mm-hmm. the Little Duckling. I had Mickey and the Beanstalk. You know, mm-hmm. I had all those Bambi, you know, I had all of them when I was a child. I wish I had them all now, but we've gone back and started really collecting them because we can remember being a child holding onto those books. And you've not only the little golden books, but the Disney ones specifically are so important to so many people. So you've really tapped into something amazing.
Yeah, it is an amazing, you know, what was also really exciting was, you know, I've worked on little golden books, you know, for 25 years. I've written many little golden books and I've just been steeped in, it's just a big part of my life. And when I first wrote Everything I Need to Know, you know, the first one, I went on a book tour and it was so interesting to see who was coming to my talks. And these people were so in love with little golden books. These people were retired teachers and you know, moms and grandmothers and people who brought their own kids. And you just see how little golden books themselves have resonated through the generations. So when we knew we were going to do a Disney one, I thought, man, that is two amazing fandoms coming together as one, you know? Right. And it was just, I was so excited about it. And so I had the opportunity to sign the Disney Everything I Need to Know book last summer in Anaheim at D23. And the line was so long for my signing. And it was, as an author, you know, that's your dream, right? You know, but the best part of that long line was just the stories that people were telling me. A man came up to me as I was signing. He actually wasn't in line, but he like kind of like asked me to stop signing for a minute. And he said, I don't want to take up your time, but I just want you to know that my wife bought me this book. I'm unemployed and I've had a hard year and she bought me this book and it just made me feel so much better and just made me feel like really positive. And then other people would say to me, you know what, whenever I'm having a bad day, I pick up Everything I Need to Know I learned from a Disney Little Golden Book and I feel so much better. And of course, that's everything an author would want to hear. But I also just, you know, I just tip my hat to Disney for all the wonderful messages they've put in their movies over the year that I was able to tap into, you know.
Out of all of the, you know, little golden books that you've edited and authored and have in your office, do you have a favorite one that you kind of go, oh, I pull this one out every now and again just because it's so much fun or I like it or the story?
Yeah, oh, you're going to die. It's called Goodbye Tonsils. And it's but my favorite Disney one was Cinderella. I had Cinderella, and I was so into Cinderella as a little girl. I just was so transported by that story. You know, I probably saw the Disney. I don't remember going to a lot of the Disney movies in the theater, but of course we saw them on The Wonderful World of Disney a lot. Although the first movie I ever was taken to was The Jungle Book, and I still remember that whole experience. So I love that Cinderella one, but I also love Goodbye Tonsils, which was, you know, a story about a little girl who gets her tonsils out. And I was fascinated by, you know, real life stuff. You know, it was like I was 3 years old and I was looking for information. You know what I mean? And I'm like, Goodbye Tonsils was, you know, that was really glamorous to me that this little girl got to pack a suitcase and go to the hospital. That to me was like, oh, she is so lucky.
And, you know, the other thing I noticed in the book, too, was the illustrations. They look like they're originals from the Little Golden Books.
Yeah, they are. So all of the art in Everything I Need to Know is from each of those books is all picked up from the vintage Little Golden Books. So that was the fun of it, was going through every book in my archive and then saying, I want this picture. I want this picture. And of course, you know, those Disney artists, you know, who were working in the 40s and 50s, especially, they were, you know, just fantastic artists. And they, you know, they often, you know, they worked on the films, but then as sidelines, they were working on the book tie-ins, too.
Right.
So you have a lot of great names who all those Disney animator fans know, like John Hench, you know, and just all kinds of people who
were
Mary Blair, you know,
yeah,
Mary
Blair. Yeah, I thought Mary Blair had done some art as well, yeah.
Yeah, Mary Blair, you know, later in her career after she left Disney, did several children's books, and they all happened to be little golden books. And she also did some covers of Disney Golden Books. She didn't actually do some of the interiors, but she would do the covers. Like, there's a really old giant Golden Book from 1944, I think, called Surprise Package. Mm-hmm. And it's the cover is in Everything I Need to Know from the Disney one. And it's so cool because it's a Mary Blair treatment of various characters. So it's a bunch of Disney characters all pulling on like the ribbon on a present. And you see like the kids from Peter Pan, you see Tinkerbell, and you see Captain Hook. And it's like, but it's a Mary Blair treatment, you know? Right. So it's just super cool. I love looking at the Disney artists' work, you know. Al Dempster, he's one of my favorite artists of the 20th century, and he worked on so many Disney films, and he got to do the books too, you know.
It's amazing. So, yeah. Speaking of the illustrations, you know, in looking at the cover, who is the lady on the cover? Don't say Tinkerbell because I know her. Who is the lady on the cover? And on subsequent covers, is it the same lady or is it?
Yeah, I know the covers are really interesting for these. So, if you haven't seen any of the Everything I Need to Know covers, I'll explain for the listeners. It's always a vintage photo of a woman from more like the 1950s era, and they usually are picked up from stock photos, believe it or not. So we pay a stock house for the use, you know, of that photo, which we then Photoshop and color, because they're always black and white photos. And we have someone here who I call her the Rembrandt of Photoshop, because her photoshopping is so good that like you see the texture of the skin, and it blows my mind. But the one on the Disney cover is a gal. Again, it's a stock photo, and when my art director found it, we just couldn't stop laughing because it was so perfect for this book. She looks like Annette Funicello.
That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Yeah. I mean, she isn't. It's not, and just to answer your question, it's not Annette Funicello, but it's a gal who could really, I'm sure in her lifetime, was told she looked like her. She has her head in her hands like, oh my golly. It's like she's looking up and with this rapt expression.
Right.
And so we thought it'd be great if she was looking at Tinkerbell. So we added Tinkerbell. We photoshopped the Mickey Mouse ears and the bow under her head, but it's really just some, maybe it was an advertisement at one time, who knows, but it's just some stock photo.
Because that was my other question, is if you got a stock photo, was she wearing the ears? Because that would have been weird.
That would have been really weird. So, you know, we were nervous because, you know, Disney has to approve everything, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And their approval process can be pretty intense.
Yes, it
can. But the cover was great. I mean, I don't remember that they had any issues with the cover, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, once we just couldn't believe the likeness to Annette Funicello.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we were like, well, we're going to add the ears and, you know, wouldn't it be great if Tinkerbell was on there? And then Disney approved it. And then I said, you know, we need glitter. We need glitter coming from Tinkerbell. Like, so we added the glitter. So the other Everything I Need to Know books do not have glitter.
Uh-huh.
But of course, this is Disney, and this is special, and this one has glitter.
Yes, it's that would be the pixie dust.
Exactly, it's true. That's what I meant. Sorry,
the Disney nerds are all screaming. It's pixie
right.
Dust.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. I don't want to correct you.
I meant
you.
Pixie dust. Yeah, the glitter represents the pixie dust. Exactly. But that was the whole point. Like, you know, we thought it was done, and then I was like, no, wait, we need the pixie dust. Like, we need to put glitter on this cover.
Yeah.
Like, something's missing. Something really important is missing. And actually, Disney didn't ask for it, but we were like, oh yeah, we need some more special effects here.
Yeah, it's such a great book.
Yeah, so talking about the permissions, on those illustrations, did you have to then go back and ask, they probably gave the permission the first go round to put them in the book. Did you have to go back and ask to have them included in your book?
Well, so over the years, you know, all the books we've done with Disney, every Disney title that we do that's a Disney book, of course, goes through a lengthy approval process. So from the time the manuscript first has to go to Disney for approval, then that's approved. Then the sketches go to for approval, and then the final art.
Right.
So every book is you know, from start to finish, and the cover, of course, is a whole other thing that has to get approved. So these books have already, you know, every little Golden Book goes through this very lengthy process. When a Disney book comes out, it's been completely approved by Disney. I mean, that's a contractual thing, of course. You know, that's a big part of the agreement. So in the case of Everything I Need to Know, I Learned from a Disney Little Golden Book, what I had to do was, my manuscript was, the text I had on every page that I had written myself, and then I had a dummy with every page had a picture from a different Disney Little Golden Book.
Right.
And then the editor just submitted that whole thing, to Disney. So it was like the art and the text went at the same time to Disney. And there were, in some cases, some pictures I was not allowed to use. So that was the word that came back. Well, it's great, but you can't use blah, blah, blah. You can't use blah, blah, blah. Maybe for legal reasons or, just little, like really technical reasons. So then I'd have to go back and kind of start over and find other pictures to use. And in a way, it made it a better book because it made me really think really hard about every choice. And I was actually at that point, I realized I had not gotten Toy Story in. And of course, that's such an important one. And I was so careful to get all the major movies in. And I had not gotten that one in. So I took out, I won't tell you what I took out, but what I put in was a picture from Toy Story. So,
So you were a little Golden Book fan growing up. So is it safe to say you were a Disney fan growing up, or were you not a Disney fan?
I mean, I think I was, I wouldn't have said I was a Disney fan, especially not when you really see the Disney fans. I mean, Disney was just an integral part of childhood. I mean, I was born in 1963, and, I grew up with all those Disney characters and movies. The Wonderful World of Disney was on every Sunday night, and we never missed it. That was a big part of our Sunday was, we had to have a bath before, that came on at 7 p.m. and we had dinner and, then a bath. And that was a big highlight. And, that's how I got most of my Disney culture, because I didn't get it from going to the parks. I never went to a Disney park until I was an adult. So, but Disney was just kind of everywhere, and everyone had a Disney book or two in their house, everybody had, we had the big Bambi, the beautiful Bambi. It was a big golden book. It was a tall, really beautiful book. And then I had my Cinderella, and we had some others. And that was, Disney was just a part of our life. Oreo cookies were, it was just there, and we consumed it and we loved it, as an adult, I wouldn't have said I was a huge Disney fan, but I've always worked, for many, many years, I worked on Disney books and I went to all the movies, and it was like a part of my adult life in a way that it had kind of been a part of my childhood. So, but I did not know what a Disney fan was until I went to D23. That was like, well, oh my gosh. Wow. Okay.
To be fair, the D23 crowd is not your typical Disney.
No, probably not. But when I went to Disney World, I was in my 40s the first time I went to that. And it was just great seeing all the adults and how happy they were. It was just like, you realize that the parents are in it for themselves, as much as their kids. And I've since come to realize there's things like Dapper Day and, all these things that go on and how much fun adults have, at these events. And at D23, I saw people with Disney tattoos, I mean, that's pretty hardcore. It was just an interesting, it was eye opening for me to see who was there. And I even met a girl whose first name had the word Disney in it. And that was her real name. I mean, I'm not going to say it over the air, but
right,
it was in a variation of Walt's last name.
Yeah.
Wow. And, that was, so yeah, that's really a whole other culture. I'll admit I did not really know about.
So it's very interesting. I mean, we've been to D23, but it's interesting to hear it from somebody that's never seen that, what their view of that fandom is like, because, we just go in and we go, oh, it's, 76,000 other crazy Disney people and we don't think anything of it. But when you say, well, hold on, there's 76,000 crazy Disney people, mm-hmm. you know, and they're tattooed or they got names yeah. and they're wearing costumes and, you know, they're
and they're really, all buying my book.
Yeah, and they're all buying right. your book. Right.
You know, that was fine with me.
Yeah.
right.
Yeah.
It's the
yeah,
one thing that did strike me about the Disney fandom is, A, it's wonderful. It's amazing to see. I mean, it is a true phenomenon. I mean, you have your Star Wars fans. You have all these different, now Star Wars is a part of Disney, but,
yes.
you know, you have all this interesting fandom, and fandom is not a new thing. But what struck me really, you know, and after D23, my boyfriend and I went to Disneyland, which I had never been there, and we're in our early 50s, and, you know, we had a blast. But it made me really think about Walt Disney and his vision and how he would feel today if he saw these grown-up fans. Because, you know, when Walt was in, you know, I saw that amazing two-part documentary on, I think it was The American Experience on PBS yes. mm-hmm. about Walt Disney. And that was really, really great. And all through watching that, and I gave a talk a couple of years ago at the Walt Disney Family Museum, which of course Diane Disney built. And I gave a talk with Charles Solomon. A lot of your listeners will know who Charles Solomon is. He's written many books about Disney animators and he lives out in California. And we did a talk together about the Disney artists and Little Golden Books. And, Walt's family was in the audience and it was great to meet them. And it was great to see who came to that talk. And here's one thing that's really interesting. We had the lights low because we were doing a slideshow. Mm-hmm. And I looked out. So, of course, you can't really see the people so much because the lights are bright where around me, but they're dark when I'm looking out. I could see these grins, like Cheshire Cat. You know, like how the Cheshire Cat, like his grin, like, right. you know, you see in the dark. Like, there were so many happy people in that audience because of how much they love Disney, you know. And it just made me really think, wow, that's one thing Walt, could he have possibly imagined as he was making all these plans and, you know, doing this really ambitious work, did he even really ever dream that, you know, it wouldn't stop meaning something to these little kids that he was working for? It would always mean something and be a big part of these kids' adult lives. Right. And that's something I'm not sure Walt could have thought about. I mean, maybe he did, but, you know, back in those days, you know, I mean, adults are different today than they were then.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
right.
And it's just, I just wish that he was, there are two people I wish were around to see the depth of what they've done. And one is Walt Disney and the other is Andy Warhol, actually. Mm. I think it's too bad that he died when he did. Here he's missed, you know, the iPhone. He's missed all this technology that he would have, you know, he would have flipped out for, and it would have been a huge part of his art. And I think about Walt Disney and I think, man, it's too bad he's not at D23 looking at all these adults, you know, like how they grew up with his dreams and they've never put them behind. You know, it's not like they put their toys in a cupboard and never looked at them again. These are like people who are living, breathing believers in that Disney magic in the way of thinking and living. And that is a really special thing.
Yeah. We talk about all the time, the two things. I would love for Walt to see what his creations in Disneyland and Disney World and all around the world, the different theme parks that they built. We sometimes jadedly talk about how he's rolling in his grave about some of the things that the company's doing, but you know, we do talk about what he would think about the parks, but specifically towards the medium that he really revolutionized with animated film. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen, you know, like Up, the first 15 minutes of mm-hmm. Up tell mm-hmm. an incredible story and there's no words.
No words, yeah.
Paper Man was a short film that was on the front end of, I want to say Brave, but I don't think that's correct. But one of the movies that came out in the last 5 years, Paper Man was a short. You know, they've had several short movies that premiere in front of the major mm-hmm. feature films, mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. to the tune of like what you're doing with the Little Golden Books. I would mm-hmm. love for Walt to see something that he you know, created, and just say, look, Walt, you wanted to be able to tell a story without having to use words. Mm-hmm. Here, look at what you've created and look at what mm-hmm. other people have done with it. I would just, if I had a time machine, that's how I would use it.
That's interesting. Yeah. It's, he really, well, it's, it, I don't know. I just grew up taking Disney for granted, but you know, what a different thinker he was. And he really, it's interesting, the whole Roy Disney thing with his brother. Even my dad watched, my dad is 88, and actually I barely knew Disney was on his radar growing up, but when I was growing up, but he lives in Oregon, and he called me after the documentary aired on PBS, and he said that he was really moved by that documentary and how he had seen, and he grew up in Carlsbad, New Mexico, okay, during the Depression. So that was a pretty desolate place, and they were, nobody had any money then, but they did, they drove a long distance to go see Snow White. And I never knew this story, and he never told me this ever. And I never knew him to take me to a Disney film or anything, but he told me how, what a big moment that was in his life to get in their car and drive, I don't know how many miles to a theater to see Snow White. And, you know, and then he was fascinated, as a businessman, he was really fascinated by the whole dynamic between Walt and his brother, and how his brother was had to think about the money.
Right.
And Walt was like, you know, he just had this vision that was almost too big, you know, to really realistically see through. But of course, since, you know, since Walt has passed on, there are all these other really visionary people who have taken on that mantle, you know, and that's really a beautiful thing to see too. You know, people like John Lasseter and just all these people who really have served out the next wave of that.
Yeah, the Disney company has been lucky. It's had some, you know, very good CEOs that have kind of kept that torch going. So they've been lucky. A little bit back on the book. So how many Disney movies are, you know, included in the book? Because I think it's like from Snow White all the way almost to
Frozen.
Frozen, yeah.
We got Frozen in there.
Yeah,
so I wrote this book two summers ago. So, of course, Frozen was, you know, that was the Frozen era, right? Of course, I knew I had to get Frozen in there. So, so that's the most recent one that's in there. But, you know, I don't know how many are featured.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I ever stopped to count, really. But we have, you know, Tangled. We have Pinocchio, Sorcerer's Apprentice.
It's like,
you know,
one per page, and there's like 96 pages. So
yeah, it's a 96 page book. I mean, the take away the end papers and the copyright page, it's not really 96, but it's probably 90. And then some are spreads. Okay, so that's just one image across two pages.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them are single pages.
Right.
I can't remember if I have repeats. Like, I mean, I know there are some repeats. Like, I know there's at least two from Pinocchio in there. There's you know, two from
solid
Finding Nemo. There's, you know, there's two from the King Arthur one, the Sword in the Stone.
Sorry,
you know, two from Tangled, I think, maybe three from Peter Pan. But you know, the goal was really to get the ones that everyone really knows. And then I always, for each of these Everything I Need to Know books, I always love to put in really obscure art.
Mm-hmm.
So art from little golden books that maybe haven't been in print since the 40s, or so it gives people a double take, like, what the heck is that from? You know, and every page has a caption
mm-hmm.
saying what little golden book the piece of art came from.
Okay.
So it's really, and a lot of people really, I've gotten a lot of letters and, you know, comments from people who really love to read those captions, and because I have the year the book came out and everything. So it was fun to put some more obscure Disney pieces in this book. Let me think of, well, one was The Ugly Duckling. Okay, so that was a 1952 little golden book.
Right.
And it's not even in four color, you know, it's in like two or three color. So that art style is very different, you know, from the facing page, which is Finding Nemo, you know. So it's fun. You see so many different styles of art Of course, you have the Mary Blair style, which is not at all like animation. And then you have, you know, by the time the 80s came around, the taste when we were doing Little Golden Books in the 80s and 90s was Disney wanted the art to look exactly like the movie. So those 80s and 90s Little Golden Books really have a high animation look to them. And then there was a change when we started doing books with Pixar, you know, starting with Finding Nemo. All those Pixar people, they're huge Mary Blair fans, for one thing. And they wanted to take the Little Golden Books back to a style that was more like a painting, not so much like an animated piece, and abstract it a little bit. And so we have like kind of like what we would call the Mary Blair style in books since Finding Nemo.
So we've got a copy of the book, my wife and I do, and we love it. It's nostalgic for us. We love it. And I wanted to say this one thing, because I know we're going to wrap up here soon. You know, when you were going down the list of all the people, you know, the John Lasseter's, the people from Pixar, the people who are currently carrying the torch, so to speak, for keeping that Disney tradition, keeping that Disney magic. You know, you failed to put yourself on that list. And I'll go ahead and be the one to say thank you for keeping true to not only Disney, but also the Little Golden Book. Because, you know, for me, I'm 45. And for my wife, she's younger, much, much, much younger than me. Because I like to stay married. You know, that's our childhood. So you literally are in control of our childhood memories.
Well, that's so nice to hear.
Yeah. So for you to do that, you know, thank you for everything that you do, because we not only enjoy the Little Golden Books as collectors, but we love your books because you pull some of the artwork that we didn't realize was out there. Now my bank account, on the other hand, is not really happy, but just
but mine thanks. Is.
That's right. That's right. Well, there you go. There you go.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show. It was truly a pleasure to write this book, and like I said, when I was done with it, I was so proud of it, and I just love how happy it makes people. And like I said, I don't take all the credit for that. Of course, a lot of that has to do with the Disney canon and the Disney magic, but what fun it was to harness that Disney magic into something that was something that I created. And I hope it's not the last thing that I do, you know, with Disney, but I'm just so glad that you know the book and that you love it. And you know, it was just really nice to talk to you both.
Yeah. Tell everybody, before we go, tell everybody where they can buy the book and where they can find you on the internet if they want to get in touch with you.
Okay. Well, I have a website. It's very easy. It's dianemuldrow.com. And my last name is Muldrow. Okay. And the book is called Everything I Need to Know I Learned from a Disney Little Golden Book. I know it's for sale in the parks, and you can get it at places like Barnes & Noble. You can, of course, get it online. It's in a lot of even like gift shops. I mean, this book is in so many gift stores, even like clothing boutiques sometimes carry them. So they are pretty much around, yeah. Pretty easy to find. Yeah. So, but I think Disney does a pretty good job of selling it too. Right. So,
yeah, if you can't find it, you're not looking very hard.
Right, exactly. And there's always online, right?
That's
right. You can always get it online.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Well, thank you, Diane, for taking the time. We had a great time, and I think everybody should, you know, go out, check out this book. Check it out in the parks. Like Diane said, it's in most of the gift shops that sell books. You can pick it up and flip through it and read it, and then you're going to go, okay, I really need this book. That's what I said.
It's a great gift, I have to say. I mean, it really is very, if you're looking for a gift that's under $10, you know, you really can't go wrong. And it's a great gift for like a graduate or a child who, you know, you want to give something inspirational to. But it's it did very well at like graduation time this year. And it is just very, you know, it's a fun little life guide that tugs at your heartstrings. So
that's perfect. All right. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you in the parks.
The Disney Parks Podcast is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company. All Disney parks, attractions, lands, shows, event names, etc. are registered trademarks of the Walt Disney Company.
steps in